playing for the American League Championship. I don't believe it. It just continues. My
oh my. High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
Oh, drives one. Right field. Did he do it? He did. Are you kidding me?
The FSS Plus podcast rolls on another week, another pod. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome into the FSS Plus podcast. I am your host, Joe Doyle. I will be running today's episode as both my supervisor and my boss turned me down. I'm alone on this cold, desolate planet we call baseball. But FSS, we roll on. And I'm here to provide you 30 to 45 minutes, I think that's what we're going to shoot for, of solid traffic content. I want to be able to make your drive to work or your drive home from work a little less depressing. So how are we going to do that today? What are we going to talk about? We're about 16, 17, 18 games into the Major League Baseball season. Of course, this is going to be a podcast that revolves around prospects. We're going to talk rookie of the year. We're going to talk who are the top two guys in both leagues in terms of rookie of the year voting as things stand just 3 or 3.5 weeks into the season. Also, we're going to jump into a couple of team narratives. One, this White Sox team, how bad are they? And by how bad are they, I mean, where are they going to rank in terms of worst teams that we've seen in recent memory? Because, ladies and gentlemen, as I look at this roster and I look at how things chalk out, man, Chicago could be on pace for a record-setting season. Also, the Marlins, just 4 wins as Wednesday entered the fold. Are the Marlins really this bad? 4-14, are they this bad? Or, well, are the Marlins subject to a bit of bad luck? And of course, we will wrap this thing up with a little amateur baseball. We're going to talk about the top 400 drop that came out at FSS Plus on Monday, talk about risers, talk about some fallers, and talk about the general trajectory of what the first round of this draft is going to look like. And speaking of the draft, we've got to talk about the mock draft that dropped on Tuesday. Some industry intel beginning to matriculate into my cell phone in recent days and recent weeks. And then, of course, we will end this thing with your matchup of the week to watch in college baseball. So, Rookie of the year in 2024 is going to be an exciting one. But I want to talk about where things stand right now. And we'll start with the AL. First of all, Jackson Holliday is going to be involved. He's going to be involved. And I assume Wyatt Langford is also going to be involved. But as things stand today, we just need to be talking about Colton Cowser. Colton Cowser entered the season with rookie status. He played quite a bit last year, but entered the season with rookie status. And if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, I believe he holds PPI consideration, that extra first round draft pick for the Baltimore Orioles if he wins rookie of the year. So where is Colton Cowser at this point? Well, we're talking about a 24-year-old, 6'3", 200-pound outfielder, a Sam Houston State first-round pick, number 5 overall in 2021 by the Baltimore Orioles. He has played 16 games. My man is hitting .405, .435, .833 with 1.1 F-WAR on Wednesday and a .260 WRC+. Now, for you mathematicians out there, and mind you, this is not going to happen, but for you mathematicians out there, that would be a 11 F-WAR pace, which would be the highest F-WAR we've seen going back to Barry Bonds. So it's not going to happen. Like, listen, Colton Cowser is not going to be a Hall of Fame player this year. At least I don't believe so. And there are reasons to think he's going to fall back down to earth. Listen, the guy is running a 520 BABIP. The balls he's putting in play are finding the green grass over 50% of the time. League average is about 320. So, you know, it's a regression to the mean. Last season, he had 77 plate appearances last season, and he had a 175 BABIP. Just terrible luck. But the guy's running a 520 BABIP with a strikeout rate over 30%. He's going to come back down to earth. So, you know, I look at this profile and I say, okay, a 30% strikeout rate, a 6% walk rate, both of those rates are below average. So the approach and maybe not the swing decisions, but the bat to ball metrics aren't terribly kind. Now, when he's hitting the ball, he's crushing the ball, right? I mean, if you're running a 429 ISO, you're crushing the ball. Four home runs in 16 games. He's added two stolen bases. He has 15 RBIs in just 3 weeks. He's on pace for 150 RBIs on the season, 1.1 F4. I think Colton Cowser, if he can be 75% of this, if he can be 70% of this, if Colton Cowser can finish the season with a WRC plus around 125 or 130, maybe keep that F4. And he's been an asset on defense, mind you. He has been valuable. He's been an above average defender in a corner. If Colton Cowser can finish this season with an F4 in the 4.5 range, 5 win range, he is going to make... He's going to be in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The guy that, you know, I'm gonna jump to Wyatt Langford really quick before I give you the second guy that needs to be mentioned here. Langford's off to a bit of a slower start in terms of pure impact. 16 games. He doesn't have a home run yet. He looks a little bit better to me in the metrics, to be honest with you. The BABIP is normalized at 327. It's an 8% walk rate. It's just an 18% strikeout rate. The WRC plus is going to jump, but he's been worth zero F4 at this point, running a 266, 333, 313 slug. I think it's a matter of time before Wyatt Langford kind of, you know, clicks, before it all pops onto the scene and he really starts to take off. So he's not listed here because it's actually his teammate that I believe is making the better case as things currently stand. To be the Rookie of the Year in the American League. If it's not Cowser, it's probably Evan Carter. Carter is running a 211, 338, 404 slash with an anemic, bad luck, 233 BABIP. K rate is just 17% and he's drawing walks 14% of the time. The dude is not striking out and he never struck out in the minor leagues. So I think this is going to be the player that he is, a 14, almost 15% walk rate, two homers. He's got a stolen base. He's been about an average defender in a corner. This is some of the things that Carter does that Langford doesn't really do. Langford is more of a below average or to a fringy defender in a corner, whereas Carter, a little bit more average, going to provide you a little bit more speed. And I think the average, I think the on base, I think the slug, all of those are due to jump. So Evan Carter probably behind by a distant mile at this early stage, behind Colton Cowser to win Rookie of the Year in the American League. I would not take my eyes off of Jackson Holliday as he settles in. He could surge. And I think, you know, the other guy I'll bring up is Mason Miller. Listen, 15 strikeouts in 8 innings. He's got 3 saves. The issue with Miller is he plays for a bad team. And he's not going to get a lot of save opportunities. And he's a closer. So it wouldn't surprise me if Mason Miller, frankly, is traded for an absolute, you know, truckload of value at the deadline. Because closers should always be traded from bad teams. I firmly believe that. Especially if someone thinks Mason Miller is an absolutely elite prospect. I think the NL, though, is even more interesting. I really do. And I want to start with a couple of teammates in Chicago. Now, I'm not going to talk too much about Shota Imanaga because, listen, he's a bit of a veteran. He's an older player. But through three outings, he hasn't given up an earned run. He's got 16 strikeouts and just two walks. The fastball splitter combo has been absolutely devastating, and I think he's going to be the guy that catches the most headlines. But I want to talk about Michael Busch. And the reason I want to talk about Michael Busch is interesting. So let's first talk about what he's done in 17 games. 17 games, Michael Busch has not been a good defender. I mean, he's been poor at first base, but the bat has been unbelievable. He's slashing 304, 394, 679 with six homers. He has now, as we record on Wednesday, homered in five consecutive games. He has 12 RBIs, a WRC plus of 183, and an F-WAR of 0.8. Now, obviously, this is unsustainable. Michael Busch is not going to hit 60 home runs. Michael Busch is not going to run an 8 F-WAR as a guy who doesn't run, as a guy who doesn't play particularly good defense. But I think there's a chance Michael Busch posts a season like a 285, 370, 515 slash with a 130 WRC plus, and he's a 3.5 win player with, you know, upwards of 30, 34 homers, and he could approach 100 RBIs with where he's batting in that lineup. Listen, Chicago puts a ton of guys on base. They put a ton of guys on base. Nico Horner, Ian Happ, Dansby Swanson, Seiya Suzuki, they put pressure on the opposing pitcher. He's going to have opportunities with guys on base. And I think if you can tally enough counting stats, the home runs, the RBIs, it can make up for some of the shortcomings in terms of defensive and base running value. But I think this is here to stay. Busch is running nearly a 14% walk rate, a strikeout rate around 27%. You know, I think the interesting thing to be brought up here with Busch is he spent all of 2021 and 2022 at AA. He spent all of 2022 and 2023, I guess I should say, he spent 2021, 2022, and 2023 at AA and AAA. There were opportunities for teams to go get Michael Busch. There were opportunities. He's going to turn 27 years old at the end of this year. He is a very old rookie. He's not going to be a free agent until he's 33 years old. I mean, he's essentially entering the prime of his career as a first base, third base type of guy, maybe a Max Muncy type when all is said and done. It surprises me that it took this long for someone to go pick him up like the Cubs did this winter. Very interesting. So Michael Busch, clearly the odds-on favorite to win the Rookie of the Year in the NL. But I think the thing that's interesting about this division is the amount of guys that are going to be vying for this spot. I mean, I'm not even going to bring up Jackson Chourio, but he has looked tooled out of his mind. And I think it's like Langford, I think it's going to take off for Chourio. But the other guy I want to talk about is Padres outfielder Jackson Merrill. Converted outfielder. He was a shortstop, 6'3", 195. Merrill's been everything the Padres have needed in center field and wherever they put him. He's slashing 333, 408, 413 with a 134 WRC+. He's been a solid to above average defender in the outfield, and he's been worth 0.6 F-WAR. He has a home run, he has four stolen bases, an 11% walk rate, which is above the league average, and a K rate of just 17%. I promise you, Jackson Merrill is not going to strike out this year. He has never, with the exception of the cup of tea that he got after the 2021 season at the complex level, he's never struck out more than 20% in his entire career. In fact, In AA last year with the Padres, he ran a strikeout rate under 12%. The kid is not going to strike out. He's putting the ball in play. I do think the question with Merrill is going to be how this walk rate normalizes, because 11% is awfully high for a guy that has generally been in the 6% range all throughout his minor league career, and 6% in the minors is actually below average. He doesn't like to take his walks. BABIP is okay. His BABIP is currently at 400, so he is getting a little bit of good luck, but he's got the homer. He's got the four stolen bases. I think if Jackson Merrill is to win Rookie of the Year, he's going to have to find a bit more power in his stroke that he hasn't really shown in his minor league career. You know, he had 10 home runs in high A in 68 games, and then he followed that up with 5 more in double A in 46 games. So, you know, in 115 games in 2023, as a 20-year-old, mind you, couldn't drink a beer yet, 115 games at high A and double A, he hit 15 homers. I think if Merrill hits 15 homers this year, he's probably going to get passed up in Rookie of the Year voting by just some of these higher impact bats. Okay, so Jackson Merrill, clearly a one to watch. But, you know, we'll see when Max Meyer comes back up. Max Meyer has been really good. You know, 14 strikeouts in 17 innings. He's missing bats. They sent him down to AAA to bring up Edward Cabrera. But I would think Max Meyer is going to be up, you know, after 15 days or so. It feels like maybe a little bit of manipulation there. We'll see. I think Mason Wynn is interesting. It's 370, 388, 500. But he is hitting the ball harder than he had in the past. And, you know, of course, he's got the huge arm strength. Mason Wynn's going to have to hit for power. Like, he's going to have to hit for considerable power if he's going to be in this conversation. Joey Ortiz, another one. You know, he's making a ton of contact. He's not striking out. He's walking. Again, Ortiz didn't ever really show power with Baltimore. And it's not something that's a big part of his game, I think. I think he would be hard-pressed to win Rookie of the Year, although he's going to get, you know, the 500 plate appearances necessary to put up some counting stats. The guy I want to bring up as a dark horse is Jared Jones. Yeah, he's got a 4 ERA. Fine, whatever. But the metrics on the velocity, on the extension, on the pitch shape, he's missing bats aplenty. 25 strikeouts already for Jared Jones, just 2 walks. That's a 32% strikeout to walk ratio. So, I mean, yeah, he's given up the homers. I think the homers have got to come down if he's going to be this, you know, projection top of the rotation type of a player that vies for Rookie of the Year. But, you know, Jared Jones, if he stays at this pace, he could strike out, you know, 170 hitters this year. And especially if he holds the walks down. If he walks, you know, if Jared Jones walks 40 and strikes out 170 this year, he's going to be right there for Rookie of the Year voting. And Pittsburgh could use that extra draft pick in 2025, that PPI incentive. So keep an eye on Jared Jones. I think that's an interesting one that could really start to surge. And of course, Jackson Churio as well. Okay, I want to talk about the Chicago... Did I just have a stroke? I want to talk about the Chicago White Sox a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. And just, you know, how bad this... Respectfully, how bad this could get. Because I'm looking at this team. I'm looking at their 2-15 White Sox record. Let's just see. I know they have 2 wins. Yeah, just 2-14 on the year, 1-8 at home. I'm looking at this team and I'm looking at the numbers. And I just don't see anything of value. It's downright scary. They rank last in hits. They have 99 hits on the season. They rank dead last in home runs with 8. I mean, it's a distant second behind the Tigers, who have 12. RBIs, I mean, they have 31 RBIs on the season. 31 in 16 games. They're scoring less than 2 runs a game. The Oakland Athletics are 29th at 49, 18 RBIs clear. And if you just go by runs alone, they're still 16 clear of the Athletics. 34 runs. So I guess they're scoring a little more than 2 runs a game. The Athletics have scored 50. And there's just no redeeming qualities. It just gets worse and worse. The White Sox rank last in walks. I mean, I guess if you want to celebrate one thing, they aren't striking out at an incredible rate. They rank 11th in strikeouts with 139, but they're not stealing bases. They rank 25th in stolen bases. If you look at their batting average, they're tied with the Minnesota Twins for worst batting average at 195. On base is 268. That's worse in the league. Slugging is 300. That's worse in the league. OPS is 568. That's worse in the league by 30 points. I've got serious concerns about what the hell this is going to look like. And if you switch over to the pitching side of things, it's not much better. I mean, Chicago, a 4.84 ERA is 26th in baseball right now. I mean, it's just, and I would almost go out and say that, I don't know. I almost think that's a little bit of a fortuitous number because, they rank 25th in home runs allowed. I mean, they rank 23rd in walks allowed. And they've ranked 28th in strikeouts. They're not striking anyone out. And all of this has led to a whip that, of course, as you might imagine, 26th in the league. So I don't see anything of redeeming quality right now. And I understand this is a teardown. And I understand Chris Getz has a tough job ahead of him. Losing Luis Robert from this team was a backbreaker. There's no way around it. That's the only way to characterize losing Luis Robert. It is a backbreaker. Moncada's been beat up too. So I don't know. I look at this team. I look at what they've been able to achieve. I look at that lineup. I think the White Sox are probably destined to not only sell at the deadline, because they will be selling at the deadline. But I think you kind of have to take your eyes and maybe push toward what the worst record is ever. Maybe not ever, but in recent memory for the White Sox. I mean, when I say there is nothing of redeeming quality on this team, I mean, you look at their WRC plus guys that qualify: Dom Fletcher, Yoan Moncada, who's now out, Kevin Pillar and Gavin Sheets have all been roughly, I shouldn't say this. Gavin Sheets has been an above average hitter. There's no doubt about it. But otherwise, everyone else has been pretty bad. Martin Maldonado has been a train wreck. Nicky Lopez has been a train wreck. Andrew Benintendi has been awful. Andrew Vaughn, who I thought might be their best piece to move at the deadline, alongside Sheets, is hitting 172 with a 207 slug. Paul DeJong hasn't been good. Braden Shoemake hasn't been good. He's been better than others, but he's been bad. Robbie Grossman is hitting 194. I mean, what pieces here are you going to ship off? I'm sure when the team signed Paul DeJong, when the team signed Robbie Grossman, when the team signed Kevin Pillar, they said, okay, we're going to flip these guys in July. Well, yeah, Pillar's running a 130 WRC plus in 10 games, but he's hitting 214. And his legs have clearly taken a step in the wrong direction. So anyways, I don't mean to pile on to the White Sox. I genuinely don't. But as I look at this team, I say, how many losses could they have? I mean, right now, they're 2-14. Could they lose 110 games? I think so. There's only been, high. I think 12 teams, maybe 11 teams in the history of baseball to lose 110 games. And the only one to do it, well, there's been three teams to do it since like the turn of the 50s. The Tigers in 2019 went 47 and 114. The Orioles in 2018 went 47 and 115. And the Tigers again in 2003 went 43 and 119. Here's what I'll say. I do think this White Sox team could lose 110 games. I actually don't think they're going to. They have quite a few guys that are at the doorstep of making their debut in Major League Baseball. Okay, Jonathan Cannon just got called up. Nick Nestrini just got called up. They've got some guys that are arriving that should inject some positivity into that dugout and that organization. And the other piece of it is, I just don't think the AL Central is an environment conducive to losing that many games. The Guardians look very good. I think they're going to come back to earth a little bit. They're a better team than they were last year, but I don't think the Guardians are a 90-win team. The Royals are going to come back to earth a little bit. They lack depth. They have a lot of very exciting pieces, but it's going to be a war of attrition for the Kansas City Royals this year. And then as you look at the rest of that, you know, Detroit isn't a terrible team. I don't think they're going to get their ass whooped over and over and over in that division. But I do think this could be one of the 10 worst records. I think they could lose 110 games. I think it could be one of the 10 worst records in baseball history going back to 1901. And if it didn't hurt now, the fact that they landed a top six pick in the 2024 draft means they can pick 10th at the earliest. And they will probably pick 10th in the 2025 draft. That stings. It's not a good feeling to lose over 100 games and get the 10th pick in the draft. That's rough. The other team I want to look at. Let's look a little bit at the Miami Marlins. Okay. The Marlins are an interesting team in that I think they've been a little bit unlucky. Okay. First of all, you can look no further. You cannot look at the Marlins without starting on their injury list. This is a team with one of the top five rotations when healthy in baseball. Sandy Alcantara, 60-day IL. Tommy John. Yuri Perez, 60-day IL, elbow. We'll see what happens with Braxton Garrett, but he's got a dead arm. He's on the IL. You never know what's going to happen there. You never know what direction that's going, but dead arm in April, not a good sign. AJ Puck is hurt. He'll probably be back, but Ryan Weathers, cramps, he'll be back. You know, Max Meyer coming back from Tommy John, finally back from Tommy John. That's a lot of guys. Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez, Braxton Garrett, Max Meyer. I mean, and you can, you know, that's a lot of arm injuries to sustain at one time. And that doesn't even, you know, we didn't even talk about Sixto Sanchez. So, I think if you give the Marlins their full ammo, they're probably a better team than they've shown thus far. And I think it really starts with the pitching. If you look at the Marlins' ERA, they're 27th in baseball with a 4.85 ERA. It has not been good on the mound. And I actually think it's probably been a bit worse. They're 28th in whip. You know, they're surrendering a lot of walks, and they're 27th in batting average allowed at 260. So they're not pitching well, which is a bit of a surprise considering, I mean, I guess it's not a huge surprise considering the rash of injuries, but if they can get healthy by 2025, I think the Marlins will compete again. And you know, if you look at the way they're hitting the ball, it hasn't been terribly impressive either, but we expected that. You know, 216 batting average as a team, just a 600 OPS, that's 28th in baseball. They're not hitting at all. I mean, they're 26th in walks. If you look at strikeouts, they're kind of middle of the pack. They just don't have a lot of guys on that roster that can impact the baseball right now. I mean, they've only got 14 home runs on the season in 19 games. That's 26th as well. So here's the thing. I look at what the Marlins have done this year. I look at the players on that team, and they've got to find a way to develop some offense. I mean, they have two players, Nick Gordon and Luis Arraez, who have been above average, who have been better than replacement level players at the plate. And it's not by a lot. Nick Gordon's running a 118 WRC plus, and Luis Arraez has been worth 108. He's hitting 292, but he's just, again, zero slug. Jazz Chisholm, not living up to the lofty expectations. Jake Berger is hitting 228 here early in the season. Josh Bell, 212. Brian De La Cruz has actually been, you know, okay, 276, 286, 408, but he's one walk in 77 plate appearances. So they need answers. You know, they need answers. And if you look at the Marlins prospect lists, there's not really anything coming. I mean, Victor Mesa, yeah, he probably arrives. Jacob Berry, you know, he's not a player that you really want to get like terribly excited about. The team needs to draft hitters and draft hitters and draft hitters and re-inject some excitement into the top of this farm system. They're going to be better in 2025. They're going to have some of their arms back, but it's going to be tough sledding until then. And they're going to have to find a way to find offense this upcoming winter. I mentioned that the White Sox could lose 110 games. I think the Marlins could lose 100 as well. They're 4-14, and they're going to have to get, you know, Cabrera and Max Meyer and some of these guys that are still, you know, hopefully Braxton Garrett comes back and provides some value. They're going to have to pitch. And yeah, we'll see if they do. Okay. Let's jump into amateur ball. Jump into a little bit of amateur ball. Let's talk about the top 400 release from this past week. A big week, a very big week at Future Star Series. One of my favorite weeks of the year. I get to do one of these every month. It's all I have. It's all I have bandwidth for. But the top 400 is out at Future Star Series, and some big jumpers. Most notably, Nick Kurtz jumps back five spots into the top five. I think he could go as high as number one. But the guys that need to be mentioned, Cam Smith at Florida State continues to shove up boards. You know, he's now up to number 16 overall in the class. He's getting love inside the top 10. Cash Mayfield, a lefty out of Elk City, Oklahoma, shoves inside the top 20. He's up 132 spots. He went from what I essentially deemed as a fourth rounder to, okay, this guy's going in the first. Done deal. Braylon Doty, loved this kid at Area Code Games. Doty up 27 spots. Now inside, not only inside the top 50, he's inside the top 25. He's probably going to go on day one, or at least inside the top 39 picks. I doubt Doty makes it out of Comp A. Dakota Jordan and his tools, up 22 spots from 48 to 26. He's going to go in the first round. And then as you get into Comp A in the second round, the biggest jumper, at least in that range, Peyton Tolley. TCU lefty, elite extension, a fastball that just eats up bats, carries through the zone, flat vertical approach angle at the top of the zone. It's an unhittable fastball at 6'6", workhorse frame, gyroscopic slider that nobody's been able to hit, up 124 spots to 42. And actually, since we're on the topic, to number 42, we should probably talk about the mock draft. I mean, the mock draft is you guys are digging the mock draft. Speaking of Peyton Tolley, he's way inside pick 42. He actually goes to pick 36 to the Cleveland Guardians. And as I look back at this mock, and I have Nick Kurtz going number one overall, massive haircut to the Cleveland Guardians. We'll talk about that. Chances are that team would spend their resources on a high school player. They would pull a high school player down with that number 36 pick. So while Tolley is the pick there, I think you could probably aim a little higher with some high school, just something sexy on the high school side. But Nick Kurtz, number one overall. I'm hearing it, folks. And I said as much in the blurb. There is smoke with Nick Kurtz going number one overall. It's not something I've made up. I'm hearing it in the industry. Now, Kurtz, Bazana, Condon, Caglione, Braden Montgomery. I think you could throw Connor Griffin in there, maybe. There's enough guys at the top of this class where Cleveland is going to have the ability to pin all of these players against one another. Hey, Travis, slot value is $10.5 million for the first slot. We're good with taking Charlie Condon. We're good with taking Nick Kurtz. Will you take 9.5 to go number one? If he says no, they go to Condon. Charlie, hey, we love Nick Kurtz. We love Travis Bazana, but we love you, Charlie Condon. You are our guy. We've got options, though. And we're wondering, will you take 9.5? Save us $1 million here with this first pick to go number one overall. No? Okay. Hey, Nick, we love Bazana. We love Condon, but you are our guy. You have tons of impact in that bat, and you've really surged. We're curious, man. Will you take $9 million to go number one overall? We'll save $1.5 million. We'll continue to supplement the pieces around you. We don't think you have any suitors inside the top three besides us. What do you say? No? Okay, they go to Braden Montgomery. These are the types of, you know, people forget. You can say Charlie Condon is the number one player in this class and believe it. Fine. You can say Travis Bazana is the number one player in this class. Fine. That's totally fine to agree with. But you know what? You could also say that Paul Skeens was the number one player in the 2023 class. And if you truly believe that, you have to understand that because Dylan Cruz existed, because Wyatt Langford existed, and to a lesser extent, because Max Clark and Walker Jenkins existed, they were able to pull Paul Skeens down about $550,000 to go number one overall. So the leverage that is being created at the top of this class is really exciting for the parity that could happen at the top of this class. When Cleveland has five or six names that they can leverage off one another to get the best deal they can on the player that they want, it makes things more competitive at the top of the class. So as I look at this number one pick, I think Nick Kurtz, as things stand today, and this could change, provides the greatest amount of bonus pool flexibility at this pick. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. Charlie Condon goes two. Jack Caglione goes three. Travis Bazana goes four. I think you could interchange Bazana and Caglione at three. I think you could put Caglione at four to Oakland. I haven't heard anything otherwise. Still hearing high school for the White Sox at five. And then Braden Montgomery. I'd say the Royals, the real winner here with Braden Montgomery slipping to six. And then you'll see a lot of high schoolers baked in below that. I think this is a year where more and more, because there are enough red flags on the college bats, you're going to see some of these high school guys pulled up. Okay. Lastly, and then I'll leave you guys with this. Get out of here in about 45 minutes. Matchup of the week from a draft perspective. Let's go this week with Texas A&M against Alabama. A&M, the number one team in the country. Alabama, the number 18 team in the country. Listen, you're going to get Braden Montgomery every night. You're going to get Chris Cortez from A&M. You're going to get Troy Wansingh from A&M. And then shortstop Ali Camarillo is a pretty darn good player for A&M that you need to keep your eyes on. That kid can really pick it at shortstop. And I think because the glove is so good, he's kind of got a fifth or a sixth round floor. Bama's not bad either. Ben Hess, their right-handed pitcher, has got to get back on the train if he is going to be a first-round pick. It has not been good from Ben Hess over the last few weeks. As we look at where his season has gone, you know, this is a guy that I thought was trending towards being a first-round pick. Over his last five starts, he's walked 5, 1, 4, 4, and 3. And in those starts, he has yet to go 5 2/3 innings one time. So 39 and a third innings, 65 strikeouts is tremendous, but 23 walks puts Ben Hess squarely in the conversation of, is this a reliever? He's going to have to pick it up. So Alabama versus Texas A&M, that's a couple of real good teams. I mean, you're going to get Pierce George at Alabama. You're going to get Ian Petritz at Alabama. We're talking 1, 2, 3, 4, potentially 6 top 5 rounders in that contest. A very, very exciting matchup. But that is going to do it. Another episode of FSS Plus, the Future Star Series Plus podcast. Until next week, let's see if the Marlins and White Sox can go get a couple of wins, eh? See ya. So just chill till the next episode.